From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
88 days until the election. Kind of appropriate, apropos, right? 88.3 FM reminding you that you have 88 days to get registered. And you can do that online. Just go to Google and search, how do I register to vote online? Find a way to do that. And then, put it on your calendar, November 5th. We really hope that you will be registered and that you will go vote. And let me reiterate, we're not asking anyone to register with any specific party or to vote any certain way. We are encouraging you, though, to take advantage of the freedom given to you and the advantage you have to be able to go and participate in our nation's elections, not only our nation's elections, but local elections as well. And I even said yesterday on the show, those local elections often, if not always, just as or more important than any federal election that you'll be doing. Now, with that in mind, somewhat related, I want to remind you that Eric Metaxas's film will be shown as a free event at Calvary Church this Monday. Letter to the American Church. That film will be shown in the Plex at 6:30. Eric Metaxas, along with several leading conservative voices of today, explain how cultural Marxism has taken over America, including the church. And the cast gives practical examples on how to take action and turn our country back to freedom, liberty, and ultimately God himself. We've posted the information on the events page at klyt.fm. Go to klyt.fm/events and find out about Eric Metaxas's Letter to the American Church showing a free event on Monday, August 12th, this Monday, 6:30 in the Plex at Calvary Church. There we go. Full hour today with our monthly guest. Paul Gessing is here from the Rio Grande Foundation. And let me rattle these off real quick, Paul. Rio Grande Foundation at riograndefoundation.org. Errors of Enchantment, much of which we'll be getting our content for today's discussion. That's errorsofenchantment.com. And you can hear from Paul and guests on the regular podcast at tippingpointnm.com. There you go, Paul. Thanks for coming in.
Good to be back with you, Steve. Missed you last month, but boy, just a few things happening in political news in New Mexico and across our great country.
Yeah, and let me say this, just to clear up any confusion. The former president, Donald Trump, was shot. It wasn't shards of glass or... Well, I'm going with that because that's what he says, and that's what I understand the investigations have shown. That's just one of the all the different things that we have to distract us and keep us. You know what? Quite honestly, Paul, often from looking at what's really important. You know what's important. What's going to be affected as we head into the election and. I've even seen some of these memes that, looking back at mug shots or, different things that different candidates have been found in an unsavory place or whatever, like 30 years ago. And I am much more interested in what all of these candidates, local and national, have done more like in the last, 4 years and how it impacts us directly.
Well, I definitely will be happy to talk about state level news in New Mexico throughout this hour. But it is worth noting that since I talked to Jim just a month ago, let alone our conversation, not only was the president attempted to be assassinated, the Secret Service has come under tremendous fire, not just for that incident, which they clearly dropped the ball repeatedly, but also
they say they did.
The cocaine in the White House looks increasingly like a cover up.
I didn't even see that. That's come back up.
That has come out. So real issues there at Secret Service, and of course, Joe Biden and the Biden administration, including Kamala Harris, are 100% in charge of the Secret Service and its actions. Then we had Biden replaced at the top of the ticket by the Democratic Party in what you can only call a behind closed doors shift with the party, and an acknowledgement that Joe Biden really did have some mental health issues and was not on the ball, despite months and years of denials on the part of many in the media and in his own party, all the way to the top. We had the replacement of Kamala Harris, who has yet to put a single policy issue on her website. Her campaign website has zero issues of specificity on her website. She's trying, I think, the Michelle Lujan Grisham approach to running, which the governor ran 2 years ago after 4 years in office. The only issue she talked about was abortion on that particular her campaign website. And I think we're going to get a healthy dose of abortion and radicalism on that issue throughout this campaign for the presidency. And the media are complicit in the whole thing. It's absolutely a joke that it's been 18 days since Kamala Harris took over from Joe Biden in the campaign.
Which, by the way... Yeah. Sorry, not sorry that you went out and voted in the primary, and the Democratic Party seems to have decided that the process wasn't that important.
Yeah, absolutely. Democracy and the concerns for its health and its future are completely overblown, or at least subjective, if they don't like the person who is calling the shots anymore for whatever reason. They will go a different direction. And
a lot's been happening, Paul.
Yeah, and that's just national stuff. I know we've got plenty to talk about right here in New Mexico, but of course, who wins the presidency is of some level of relevance for number of reasons. Obviously, the abortion issue being a top one. Kamala Harris, New Mexico does have very liberal abortion laws already in place, but Kamala Harris wants to make that the law of the land. The advertising that I've seen from her campaign has been on that very issue, making abortion essentially
a right up till birth. Saying.
Yeah.
Now, so when I hear right, I mean I think Constitution.
Absolutely.
And so the other thing, as far as bringing that local, we talked about yesterday on the broadcast, our chief executive in New Mexico, who's already spent $10 million in Las Cruces, now has seen, my understanding, based on what I heard from Carla Sontag yesterday at the New Mexico Business Coalition, that she has $400,000 to spend in Texas to recruit professionals that would staff abortion clinics here in New Mexico to try, advertisements in Texas to try to draw doctors or nurses or whatever's needed to staff those clinics to bring them to New Mexico. So even more of our tax dollars being spent.
Yeah, and that's definitely something I want to talk about. But Kamala Harris said in 2019 that she wanted to ban fracking, which the fracking process is responsible. This is hydraulic fracturing, as it's more properly known.
How much of the $15 billion does that impact?
95%. Okay. So virtually all of New Mexico's oil and gas production would be destroyed if that were to happen. Kamala Harris walked it back, at least through some unnamed campaign spokesman talking in one media outlet. So we don't really know what she's what her beliefs are, because she's trying to change a lot of her opinions. She's not getting called on the carpet by the media.
Well, and no press conference yet.
No press conferences. Absolutely. So
now that she took from her boss's playbook.
Right. Biden was very reticent to talk publicly. Everybody thought and assumed that that was because of his mental issues. Kamala Harris, not exactly somebody who lights the world on fire when she's having a conversation like we are today. She's okay from a podium on a teleprompter, but spontaneously, she has a tendency to
word salad,
ramble, and make statements that have no sense to them, no point to them. And for my elementary school teachers, would be darn near impossible to diagram in terms of what is the noun, what is the verb, et cetera. Good luck with the Kamala Harris sentence.
And let me make this clear for those that are listening. And I will be at the polls, God willing, the creek don't rise, right, on November 5th. And I will take part in the election. But let me make this clear. My vote is for Jesus, and come Jesus come, and I'm ready for him to be the chief. Well, he is, to literally set up his government. And that day isn't here yet, and we have opportunity to impact what's happening in our country, in our state, in our county, in our city. Lots to consider as we head towards November. Yeah, Paul?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are more issues than we have time to talk about, and that's just at the national level. We've got plenty to talk about at the state level and local level, though.
Well, let's do this. We're a little bit early on a break, but let's go to a break. We'll come back and we'll jump right into some of the content that you'll find at errorsofenchantment.com. That is where Paul typically blogs, along with other, from time to time, some other writers, Paul, but primarily the content that you provide is available. We're going to go through some of what's there now and continue our conversation with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation, riograndefoundation.org. Let me run through these one more time. errorsofenchantment.com and the podcast website, TippingPointNM.com, all places where you'll find information that's pertinent and relevant to you living here in New Mexico. We'll be back with more with Paul Gessing right after the break on ABQ Connect. Thanks for joining us daily, 1 o'clock on ABQ Connect. Do want to remind you, as the kids head back to school, that we have posted on our website at klyt.fm, right there on the Action Center, actually on the homepage. A back-to-school guide for parents with what our kids are being exposed to in school. You know, you can, I mean, we've heard all about what the kids are exposed to. This toolkit has been put together by the Family Policy Alliance and Focus on the Family. It's a resource to find ways to protect your children and prepare them to defend their faith. You'll find that. It's a free resource from Focus on the Family and the Family Policy Alliance. Go to klyt.fm on the homepage in the Action Center. You'll find that back-to-school guide for parents. Paul Gessing is with us in studio from the Rio Grande Foundation. It's riograndefoundation.org. The content we cover today, mostly from, if not all, from errorsofenchantment.com and Paul's podcast, TippingPointNM.com. Paul, before we jump into local issues, which maybe we'll do that by this question, what's been the latest on the podcast?
Actually, today I release a conversation with Nella Domenici, running for U.S. Senate. That's the latest and greatest show we have going. I talked to Janice Arnold-Jones, former state rep, about the election integrity issues facing our state. Had a conversation a few weeks ago with Steve Jones. He's running for U.S. House of Representatives in District 1. Those are some of the recent interviews. Talked to Carol White from the New Mexico Restaurant Association about issues in the restaurant industry, a lot of restaurant closures around the country, dealing with inflation, food prices, labor rates, all those kinds of things. And then, of course, President Trump in his campaign has talked about making tipping tax-free. So various issues of note there in that in our interviews on Tipping Point New Mexico. And you can find all those at TippingPointNM.com.
And, of course, you can find it where you find some of your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, et cetera.
There you go. All right, so the Rio Grande Foundation has conducted a study about New Mexico's clean fuel standard, which prior to you sending the notes on this today, I actually wasn't up to speed, but I'm looking forward to hearing what you found.
Yeah, well, You know, the governor has done a lot. We've talked about EV mandates and other mandates that she's done absent the legislature and electoral bodies. This one she did actually get through. It's not a surprise because the Democrats control the legislature overwhelmingly. And of course, she is a Democrat. And they did pass what is HB 41. That is the clean fuel standard on a 36-33 vote this year, the 30-day session. And it was something that we were concerned about. We opposed in various committees because we believed, and I see rightfully now with our analysis, not that I'm surprised by the outcome here, but we believe that it was going to have some detrimental impacts on New Mexicans and the price at the pump. So what this bill does is theoretically reduce the CO2 impact of the gas we put in our gas tanks, and it does so by forcing various reformulations and a regime of tax credits and other subsidies onto gas consumers. And the upshot is that our analysis found that it will increase gasoline and diesel prices by 30 cents and 34.7 cents per gallon by 2030, which is right around the corner. By 2040, it will cost 45 cents per gallon on gasoline and 52 cents for diesel. Now, you may say to yourself, well, I'm driving my gas car, or maybe I drive an electric vehicle. Well, diesel means all those big trucks that are out on the roads hauling our stuff to and fro is going to impact those drivers and their bottom lines, and that means every product that we buy at the grocery store or wherever we buy it is going to be impacted. And it is worth noting, and we had issues with this at the time, and unfortunately, it's just one of the signs of the times. The state of New Mexico Economic or Environment Department, which is, of course, under the governor and her auspices, claimed to the legislature itself that there was no impact on gas prices. They said that there was, they didn't have a statistical significant impact on gas prices from the Environment Department and this policy, the Clean Fuel Standard. Now, a little thought experiment for you, Steve. If you were Exxon, if you were Chevron, BP, or one of the others, and you had the chance to cut your CO2 emissions for 20% or more, wouldn't you be inclined to do that if you could do that at zero price to the customers you serve?
Right.
I agree. Yeah, right. Unfortunately,
I mean, quite unless
that's fine.
Unless they're just evil, and they just want more dirty air.
I know the radical environmentalists would say that they're all evil because they're all in an evil business, and I'm not going to really respond to that because that's a silly argument. What I will say is that if just one of those companies embraced a plan that could get 20-30% of the CO2 reduced from filling up your gas tank and running your automobile or your truck, and you went on the market with that, you would gain market share. So it's not just about the policy. It's about the impact. And the reality is that this is going to cost some money for New Mexicans, some significant money.
And I think you and I have both agreed in the past that, hey, listen, there's nothing wrong with being good stewards of the planet that we're given. If we have ways that we can reduce carbon dioxide, you know, exactly what you're talking about. However, you know, the things that I've seen in general, and we've talked about it here too, seem more of a political agenda or who's getting rich on what. When there's so many arguments against, you know, whether it's EVs or windmills or what have you, what I'm saying is, you would certainly think that if any of these large companies had opportunity to reduce their carbon dioxide emissions,
at no cost to them, that would only better the planet and those living on it. Yeah, sure. It makes just common sense. But what you're saying is the people that were coming up with the clean fuel standard are saying, you know, these changes, they're not going to cost anybody anything to implement. And actually, let me back up, too. It seems like it does seem like with what's apparent as far as prices changing, that, you know, the way to clean things up and get people off of internal combustion vehicles is to make the fuel so expensive they have to choose to walk, ride a bike, or switch to an EV that isn't necessarily even better for the environment.
Yeah. So just to be clear, this policy implemented in the legislature, and they have not actually fully implemented it as a starting point, let alone 2030, 2040. It will not take effect until next spring at the earliest. We'll see how that goes.
Okay. So is there any stopping it?
A new governor could retrofit this through the legislature, so you really need a legislature that's willing to reverse course. I don't think the current legislature, even though it passed very narrowly, would be inclined to overturn it unless some radical, you know, dramatic changes happen in those legislative elections. And that legislative body would need to be willing to work with a new governor to reverse course.
I mean, this discussion is largely informative. Here's what's coming.
And calling into question the objective nature of government agencies like the Environment Department, which claimed that this would have no impact on people at the pump, when in reality, and what we're doing, there's a handful of states that have embraced this policy, all West Coast states, Washington State, Oregon State, and California. We used data, information, formulas from Oregon to understand how this would impact New Mexico. We're not making this up out of whole cloth. This is using data from other states that have enacted similar policies. And Oregon was the one that most resembled New Mexico. That's why we used that. So, over time, we'll see higher prices at the pump.
If nothing else, it's reminding the New Mexico voter that the people you have in the roundhouse are making these decisions, and the way to impact that, like you said, a new governor or new legislature, is by going on November 5th and voting, and in the the future elections, especially the local elections, when you have opportunity to do that. Before we go to a break, Paul, unless there's more on that, let's talk about UBI and the report that cast doubt on merits of itself.
Yeah. The universal basic income is what UBI is known for, is known as. One of those mini acronyms.
Very, very, very interesting article. It goes, I think, much went into the psyche of people.
Yeah, and this was something that we did not carry out, this report. In fact, this report was done by the National Bureau of Economic Research, and I think it's a really worthwhile and well-done report. In social science, so obviously in most scientific realms, it's pretty easy to set up a control group. You know, you have two groups, one that's subject to the change and one that's not subject to the change. It's kind of basic science. In social science, sometimes you have ethical issues with putting those kinds of control groups together. But in this case, they did that. They gave a random group of 1,000 low-income people $1,000 per month unconditionally for 3 years, and a control group of 2,000 participants received $50 a month. So not no money, but $50 a month is pretty trivial compared to $1,000 a month.
Right, it was a night out instead of rent.
Right. So what they found is that among the UBI participants, those folks receiving the $1,000 earned $1,500 less, despite being given more money annually, For every dollar they received, income dropped by 21 cents. Those participants remained unemployed longer than the control group, worked less, with no substantive change in the quality of employment, and reported higher rates of disability.
Okay, so a cursory look at that from a layperson like myself says, if you're just given money to, well, just given what you need to get by, which $1,000 a month isn't enough to get by,
right?
And clearly, the idea here is this was to supplement their income.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're given money, the more likely you are to almost count on that. I'm being given money. When not so much. There's that hunter-gatherer, get out and get the job done because you need to survive.
Absolutely. And one of the quick things that I would talk about relating to UBI, the kind of libertarian fantasy or whatever, there are some libertarian economists who have supported the broad idea of a UBI in the past, a universal basic income. The idea has been to take all the programs, all the federal, all the state, all the local, dump them, and instead take some calculation of the money that is being spent on those programs and hand individuals a check for that amount of money. The theory being
qualifying individuals.
Right. You'll get more bang for your buck if you give the low-income individuals control of the resources rather than having all of these various strings attached. The problem is, and the problem in a social experiment like this, is actually doing that. Now, I think it'd be very difficult to make a realistic calculation and who does that, what assumptions are made, et cetera, et cetera. So what ultimately likely will happen, and we've seen other experiments, other pilot programs right here in New Mexico on this issue, is that a universal basic income will come on top of those existing welfare programs. So right there, it kind of defeats the purpose from a more libertarian limited government perspective. But this actually shows that just on its face, universal basic income has some real detrimental impacts on the livelihoods and lives of the people who are theoretically supposed to benefit from it. So handing people a check is not good for the human soul or their desire to work and be productive members of society just on its face.
Okay. Well, I'm going to date myself with this closing comment on it. It seems from the study, rather than being gifted and given what you need, it's better to go out and earn.
I remember those commercials well. Smith Barney, I believe.
Think so.
Yeah, excellent. Very well done.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We're in the middle of a conversation with Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation. And the two items that we already covered, you'll find on errorsofenchantment.com. Remember, Paul's podcast that we mentioned earlier found at tippingpointnm.com. We're going to come back. We got more to talk about what's going on in the state right after this on ABQ Connect. Hey, thanks for joining us on ABQ Connect. Don't forget, tomorrow we get our Friday financial update with Brian Cochran, and we'll have some planning on having something for you from the Heritage Foundation as well. So make sure to be tuned in for that on tomorrow's broadcast. Listen, here's something else that's coming up on tomorrow's broadcast. We're going to have information about the Eric Metaxas film being shown on Monday, the next biblical citizenship class that starts in early September, and we'll get information about Get Out the Vote workshop that's coming Saturday, August 24th to the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center at 12th Street north of Indian School. You'll learn modern Get Out the Vote strategies and best practices for absentee and early voting, election integrity, and poll watching and greeting. That information about the Get Out the Vote workshop is actually on our website at klyt.fm/events. But we'll hear more about it tomorrow on the broadcast of ABQ Connect. So join us for that. This full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation, also errorsofenchantment.com, and his podcast, Tipping Point NM. com. And I'm going to imagine, Paul, although you come on, you know, once a month and we cover a lot of issues, if folks are regularly going to the podcast, they're going to catch some of those headlines that, you know, by the time you come in, you know, 30 days later, that are kind of passe or not as timely, I should say, as they would be if they're catching up with you regularly at Tipping Point, New Mexico.
Well, we do different formats for our shows, Tipping Point, New Mexico, the podcast that we have at Rio Grande Foundation. Every week we record a conversation about the latest issues facing our state and nation, just kind of a rundown with Wally Drangmeister and myself, my podcast co-host. And so that is a little more timely. I mean, it's not as newsworthy right now that President Trump was nearly assassinated. You know, that's a older story at this point, although I think it's been kind of memory holed in many ways by various media outlets. We also do interviews, and those are pretty evergreen. Obviously, candidates for office come and go. We talk to a lot of those folks, but the issues facing New Mexico and to an extent our nation really tend to be evergreen. Maybe there's a few issues that fade into the backgrounds, no longer issues at all. But generally speaking, there's a lot of issues facing our country and our state, and we haven't successfully solved a whole lot of them at this point.
Well, one of those issues is EV transition mandate. You know, something that's come along that some have hoped that will go away, and there's maybe indication that it's not going to go as well as those that implemented the mandate had hoped.
Oh, I think it's safe to say that the situation with electric vehicles is not going to go particularly smoothly. And by situation, I mean the way that our governor, through her unelected Environmental Improvement Board, attempting to force New Mexicans to buy electric vehicles to the tune of 43% of all vehicles sold in New Mexico. And that's supposed to happen by not next summer, but the summer after that. So summer of 2026, less than 2 years out, we're supposed to be buying 43% electric vehicles in New Mexico.
How long has this plan been underway?
Well, we adopted it as a state last November, thanks to that unelected board.
We're not even in a year.
Right.
We're sneaking up on a year. And so if it's, you know, 2 years from now, that it's going to supposed to be at 43%. So we should be at, you know, somewhere between 10 and 15%.
That's theoretical, of course. This is all based on what California did. And there's some arcane issues there that we kind of talk about. This is a exemption that California has dating back to the 60s in terms of its ability to regulate what comes out of tailpipes, dealing with smog issues in the 60s, 70s, and early 80s. Long story short, California has radicalized itself, and they decided under their current governor to embrace a elimination of the internal combustion engine by 2035.
And that's the governor they decided to keep.
Unfortunately, yes. And there are efforts underway in Congress to essentially prohibit other states from using California as a policy footstool in order to achieve or force these same policies into place. But the whole thing's going to fall apart like a house of cards anyway, because right now, according to the trade association that publishes these data points, and it's called the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. So you could go on their website. You can find the link to their website at heirsofenchantment.com. You can find that in the first quarter of 2024, New Mexico EVs as a percentage of new vehicle registration fell. That fell to 4.59%. It fell by 0.13%. It wasn't a big drop, but we're in the process within 2 years of requiring 10 times that number approximately of EV sales as a percentage of the total. That is going to be a very hard situation for car dealers, for average New Mexicans, especially in rural areas and agricultural communities. Navajo tribal areas are another specific concern. It's just not realistic. The manufacturers like Ford are losing money hand over fist on these vehicles. Most of them are cutting back in terms of their manufacturing of the electric vehicles. And every day there's a story about how electric vehicles just are not for everybody, and there's concerns about them. In fact, on Ford, Ford cut their earnings by 35% on a single day in July 25th, 2024. So just this last July, they cut their earnings 35%. And their stock price went down 18% that day. So that was just late July. And this is going to have repercussions for people purchasing automobiles of all walks of life across our country and our state.
So, Paul, any anticipation as to, because of the lack of staying on pace for getting to 43%, whether our state government would abandon this mandate or extend the deadline for getting to 43%?
Well, you never know. This governor is obviously going to still be with us through the summer of 2026. So it's going to be hard for her to kick back her own policy. She could do that to the next governor. And of course, voters that November will have a ability to choose the next governor. We don't know who that will be yet. There's rumblings and there's talk, but I do think that the governor will have a lot of pressure put upon her as this mandate and this reality kicks in. Car dealers are going to see business go to other states like Texas, and that means jobs, that means layoffs, that means closures of tax-paying car dealerships. That's going to be very hard for her to stomach, even though she'll be on her way out the door. Of course, we've seen this governor reverse course on issues. Mask mandates is one that really I remember. All of her COVID policies were a total failure, and we never got an apology. We just got a press release saying we're reversing course, and that was the end of it. She's not one to apologize when she makes mistakes. So those are all factors that are we're watching as we head towards this date. But realistically speaking, New Mexicans aren't going to buy 43% electric vehicles within the time allotted. In fact, they're not even buying 5% electric vehicles as it currently stands.
All right. So that was one concern of our governor. And she's also I guess we thought that there was concern about crime, that thus the special session that it seems like she got a lot of pushback on, and that didn't seem to be very effective, the special session, right? The primary reason for meeting was to deal with the crime issue.
Yeah, so this is a complicated one. We had a special session in July. The governor was the prime mover of that special session, and she called it to order, as she is wont to do, as the governor of our state. We at the Rio Grande Foundation were perplexed, as I think a lot of people were on both sides of the aisle, due to the fact that here we are 6 years into her term in office, and she's not really done a lot in the legislature or politically to focus on crime-related issues. For example, back in June, we just had this primary election. The governor was four square behind a lot of very progressive legislative candidates, the very same progressives who have opposed her repeatedly in this session and beyond, and previously on issues of criminal justice reform. So That is perplexing. Of course, the Republicans have put forth proposals time and time again. Bill Ream, Albuquerque Republican, retiring in the near future. He is the one who's sponsored many of these bills and gotten very little support from the governor. So all of a sudden, the governor decides this is a crisis. I want to do something. And so, you know, I think from our perspective, we said, sure, I'm glad the governor's finally focused on trying to do something about some relevant issues. The Albuquerque Journal editorial board, which the governor studiously ignored all of their thoughts, had suddenly gotten a seat at the table with her policies. So I do think crime is an issue. I'm not confident. I kind of agree with the progressives and the Republicans that a special session was not exactly the right time to address these issues. The governor, of course, was seen in public with Mayor Tim Keller, who not just we, but the Legislative Finance Committee, the internal think tank, really called into question law enforcement in Bernalillo County, which really means the city of Albuquerque, which really means Tim Keller. So there's that as well. But then a lot of talk was about systemic problems in crime and criminal enforcement. And we cite a couple. Certainly one is the education system. And, you know, I realize that's a very systemic issue. But gosh, if we're going to solve our crime issues in the state of New Mexico, isn't it incumbent upon us to educate our citizens and do a better job with that?
Right. If they're getting a good education, they're obviously much more likely to find work. And if they're busy at work, they have much less time to commit crime. Is that the simple?
Even simpler than that, idle hands are the devil's workshop. Along those lines, the Legislative Finance Committee, in a separate report about workforce participation, called out that very same issue and said that increased employment correlates with lower crime rates. And then it went on to say other things. So what is the governor doing? Has she talked about workforce participation and how we need to address those issues? I haven't heard it. So, yeah, and workforce participation and education are tied at the hip. So all of those issues should be addressed as well. And it's not that she's some new governor that's just come in and had all these brilliant ideas. She's been in office for 6 years. She should have been doing things related to these policies all along and simply has not.
Okay, so this was that midterm project that she waited until the last night.
You got it, yeah.
Kind of. Okay. Hey, listen, we're visiting with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. The website for the Rio Grande Foundation, you'll find it, riograndefoundation.org. The content that we're discussing today, you'll find Paul's blogs on errorsofenchantment.com. And we've mentioned a couple of times. I really encourage you to go check out Paul's podcast with various guests. And that is Tipping Point New Mexico. It's tippingpointnm.com. And of course, as I mentioned, you can find it where you find some of your favorite podcasts. We're going to take a break. We've got a couple more things to talk about. We'll do that with Paul Gessing of the Rio Grande Foundation right after this on ABQ Connect. All right in the middle of a conversation with Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation. Go to riograndefoundation.org. Errorsofenchantment.com is where you'll find these topics that we're covering today. And again, a reminder about Paul's podcast at tippingpointnm.com. Now, Paul, typically when people go to errorsofenchantment.com, they get to see what your comments are on specific things. And a little bit different here, there's something regarding the Economic Development Department where the Rio Grande Foundation is interested to hear from the listener.
Well, we're trying to engage our listeners and readers to get involved in a process that the Economic Development Department has set up. So it's really about submitting your comments, whoever you may be out there, to the Economic Development Department. And the comment period is open right now and through the end of August about New Mexico's strategic plan. And this is, of course, the Economic Development Department, which is, you know, kind of one of those groups that we really watch and care about mostly at the Rio Grande Foundation because of our work on the economy. They cite six challenges. I'm going to just kind of highlight a few of them. and talk about one being the difficulty in attracting, retaining talent in urban, rural, and tribal communities in New Mexico, misalignment between higher education and industry, public sector dominance in New Mexico's innovation ecosystem, and the concentration of the economy in a few key industries. Now, all of that points, in my opinion, to two basic things that the Rio Grande Foundation works on that are most definitely in our wheelhouse. One of those is improving and reforming our education system. So we need to focus time and resources on empowering parents and families to choose the education that works best for them. And that will in turn result in a better trained, more capable, more ambitious workforce. We need those people to be motivated and educated. Secondly, we need a more diverse economy. And right now, oil and gas is going great guns. We don't know if or when that'll change. And it really isn't relevant because the idea that New Mexico is doing great economically, even in the midst of this massive oil and gas boom, is kind of a red herring. We're simply not doing that great as a state economically. We should do better. We should be using those resources that we have available to improve our tax structure, spend it on crime-related issues, and actually get serious about fighting crime, hiring more police officers, one perfect example, making sure that people who commit crimes do real time, stay behind bars. All of those kinds of things can be done with those resources. And obviously, infrastructure, improving our roads, all of those are somewhat related. But these economic development issues, you can go to errorsofenchantment.com. You can find that post and comments to the Economic Development Department, hopefully using some of the broader talking points I just mentioned.
All right, Paul, about 3 minutes to cover our final topic, and that's the talk about migration and how it relates to the Sun Belt and New Mexico maybe missing out.
Yeah, plenty of time. New Mexico would be considered firmly in the Sun Belt region of our nation. Of course, people who live here know that we have beautiful sun many, many days of the year, I think, over 300.
And whenever I talk to someone from Florida, the Sunshine State,
right,
I remind them that we have more sunny days here in New Mexico than they do.
And we don't have that dreaded humidity that they do in Florida either. But with all of that to be said and all of that behind us, there has never been really the same level of boom mentality that we've had here in New Mexico that you see in other states, Florida being one, Arizona being another, Texas, North Carolina, South Carolina, et cetera, et cetera.
Is Arkansas considered a
Sun Belt? Could consider it that, yeah.
Because I mean, nothing I've read, but just from talking to people, just seems like they're seeing an influx.
Yes, in general, the states of the former Confederacy, the southern states, with the exception of politically corrupt and backward Louisiana, which is often on the same level as we are in a lot of these studies. Louisiana is not in great shape, but most of those states are seeing an influx of population and jobs and economic growth. And that has to do with what I'm just about to talk about. And this report, by the way, is from the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco. So this is a working paper that they are putting together. And they're basically saying that the Sun Belt's growth go-go days are done, and that people are going to be moving further north because of climate change. Now, I destroy that very simply because 6 of the 10 fastest growing states in the U.S. are considered Southern or Sun Belt. But more importantly, in a Yahoo News analysis of this report, the author notes Southern states might still gain population for reasons other than the weather. And I know that's novel to some people, but obvious to others. Some have no income taxes and friendly regulatory policies that draw businesses and workers. Elon Musk, for instance, recently said he's relocating his headquarters of SpaceX and Tesla from California to Texas. And labor unions are less entrenched in the South, which has drawn foreign auto manufacturers and other manufacturing businesses. Unfortunately, New Mexico, we still rely on the government and oil and gas. We haven't diversified our economy because we haven't adopted the policies that you see in a lot of those fast-growing Sunbelt states. So we could capitalize on our beautiful weather and low humidity by embracing sound economic policies, but that's not the case, at least not so far.
So, Paul, if you took all of these issues we talked about today, you hear me say it. I just keep beating this, but it goes back to our citizens being involved in the election process and putting people into these positions that are making decisions for us. Often, like you've mentioned several times, using groups, committees, bureaus, whatever, full of appointed people instead of people elected to positions and having impact on us, where usually you would expect it to go through legislation, and it's just going through people that are, doing the bidding of those who put them in their position. Let me go back to the simple thing I was saying. 88 days until the election, and then there'll be an election after that. Get registered and vote.
Absolutely. And that is the number one thing people can do, is to vote and vote on people and candidates who want to empower individuals to be the dominant factor in our economy and education system.
Well, Paul, thanks again. We'll see you again next month. Go to RioGrandeFoundation.org, errorsofenchantment.com, and Paul's podcast, don't forget that, tippingpointnm.com. Join us tomorrow, 1 o'clock on ABQ Connect.